Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to bridging the gap between adventure and adventurer by helping people select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
It's Charlotte Talks. I'm David Borax in for Mike Collins. Every year, the Trust for Public Land puts out a ranking of cities when it comes to public park systems. And every year for the past 6 years, Charlotte has ranked at the bottom. It's called the Park Score Ranking, and it looks at park budgets, park sizes, amenities like basketball courts, and how close people live to a park. This year, the Charlotte and Mecklenburg County Park System moved up a notch to 96th among the top 100. We scored well when it comes to average park size, but not so well on the percentage of residents who live within a 10-minute walk of a park, and on how much the county spends per resident. This year's survey expanded to include all of Mecklenburg County, not just the city. That was a criticism in past years. The idea is that it better reflects the full operations of the city and county park system. According to the Park Score study, only 36% of residents here live within a 10-minute walk of a park, compared to an average of 72% among the top 100 cities. Charlotte's low ranking also was the result of spending just $48 per resident on Parks and Rec, below the national average of $87. There's money in the budget this year, more money than ever for parks, and we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the latest rankings and why Charlotte and Mecklenburg County's park system consistently ranks so low and how it can improve. Our panelists today are in the studio, Lee Jones from Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation. He's the director. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning.
Heidi Prus, chair of the Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation Commission. That's an advisory body to the Mecklenburg County Commission. Hello, Heidi.
Good morning.
And on the phone from Boston is Charlie McCabe, director of the Trust for Public Land Center for City Park Excellence. Hello, Charlie.
Good morning.
Charlie, let me start with you. How long has the Trust for Public Land been doing the Park Score rankings, and why did you start it?
Sure. This is the eighth year that we've actually done Park Score for the 100 largest cities, and it built on about a 20-year history of collecting data for the largest cities in the United States. We found that when we started in the early 2000s, we didn't have a lot of data that we could compare park system to park system. So my predecessor, Peter Harnick, started that role, and we really kind of focused Park Score on really taking a high-level view of park systems and doing as best we can an apples-to-apples comparison of the 100 largest cities.
I want to talk a little bit more about exactly what you were looking at in a minute, but let me ask another big picture question here. Why are parks important? What is your organization's aim here in doing this survey?
Sure. Well, I think the big thing is, you know, more and more Americans are living in cities, and what we're finding in the 100 largest cities is that there are actually 65 million people living in those cities, and that's growing, anywhere from several hundred thousand to about 500,000 a year, which is pretty amazing. So we're seeing more and more of a concentration of folks in cities, both cities old and cities new or newer, and we're also seeing increased density. More people living in multifamily housing, more people living near commercial and big multifamily residential areas, and the need for parks is going up. Not everybody can count on having their own little yard to recreate, and we find that in addition to the recreation needs, we're also continuing to face an obesity epidemic in which people aren't getting enough exercise. So that's the whole reason behind the 10-minute walk to a park is if you can lower the barrier to getting people to a park, they're going to go more frequently, and they're going to take their friends and family along with them.
Mm-hmm. Lee Jones, director of Mecklenburg County Parks and Recreation, you take a crack at that question here. Why are parks important to us?
Parks are important because people want to be in an area where they can live, work, and recreate. And as the providers of public recreation here, Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation strives to meet that goal. What's important is for people to be able to have access to the parks, to be able to do a variety of things. Mecklenburg is really growing, and with providing the number of amenities, people really want to come here and enjoy time with their families and friends.
Mm-hmm. Give us a little history, if you can. Have parks always been part of local government budgets, or where did they come from?
Well, it's very interesting. Back in 1992, the city and the county merged some services. And part of those services became that the police department, so it was a county police department and a city police department, they merged, and all the parks came over to the county. So the county had a difficult task of assimilating the parks that were within the city limits with those that were in the more rural areas of the county. But today we've been able to meet that goal by having a really diverse and integrated system in terms of the types of parks that we offer. We have 80 neighborhood parks that are from 1 to 20 acres in size. We have 38 community parks that are from 20 acres to 100 acres. We have 20 regional parks that are 100 acres or over. And we also have 26 nature preserves and 55 miles of constructed greenway that tries to tie all these things together. So our park system has evolved, and that does not include our recreation centers, gymnasiums, and special facilities.
Well, I know the national and state parks here in North Carolina are, recently celebrated their 100th anniversary, so I know that we've had the idea of public parks for at least a century here. So, Heidi, let me ask you to answer that question about the importance of parks.
Right. Well, of course, we care about our quality of life. We talk about quality of life quite a lot. Parks provide health services, of course. You know, exercising, getting out, walking, either recreating or on a greenway provides a reduction in diabetes and heart disease and obesity, of course. It's also a transportation corridor. So people are utilizing greenways as part of their quality of life as an alternative means for transportation, for sure. And, of course, there's that neighborhood connectivity. You want to have that place where Lee just mentioned that you want to get out with your family and friends and you want to recreate. Finally, and maybe just as importantly, we need to protect our natural resources here. Parks provide a vital resource as far as protection of water quality and air quality in our region. Certainly, we could use a little bit more help in that area as we continue to increase our density. So parks are a vital part of our quality of life.
And let me ask you about your role and your interest. Why did you get involved with the Parks and Recreation Commission, and what do you guys do?
Right. The Park and Recreation Commission is a 13-member advisory board. Each of those members are appointed by our Board of County Commissioners to act as a citizen advisory body to make recommendations and to give feedback as to what's going on in the community around the issue of parks. So, of course, I'm interested because my neighbors are interested. You know, our neighbors talk among ourselves. Why don't we have a park within a 10-minute walk of our house? Why don't we have access to a greenway? How can we get those things? And so understanding how those things can be, park recreation amenities can be included in your neighborhood is an important thing to do. And so as the voice of that community neighbor aspect of our community, that's what Park and Recreation does.
All right. Well, Charlie, let me turn back to you here, and let's talk a little bit more about this year's Park Score rankings.
Sure.
Can you give us kind of the big picture? What did the survey this year find, and how is it different from past years, if it is?
The biggest change was that we have a new number one. Minneapolis, Minnesota, was actually been number one since 2013, and they were surpassed by Washington, D.C., which has done a lot of work in investing in their neighborhood parks, especially in the areas of recreation and senior centers, splash pads, and basketball hoops, which are three of the six amenities that we track. The top 10 itself stayed largely the same, but I think what we're seeing is we're seeing a tightening of kind of competition in the top 20 or so, which is great. And those are the cities that are seeing, you know, tremendous rates of growth in terms of additional residents moving to the area. But overall, we're seeing a lot more focus on parks as a critical amenity in cities across the United States, and I think Charlotte's no exception. So it's exciting to see that go well. Spending has been relatively stable. The other thing that we saw was an increased focus from more nonprofits that work hand-in-hand with parks and recreation agencies to raise funds and to spend those funds in parks.
Mm-hmm. So that ranking looks at a number of different factors, and you've gathered all of this data from the park and recreation systems in all these cities. Can you just tick off for us the factors that you looked at and what they are? what it measures?
Sure. So we will look at four different categories. We look at acreage, and we look at two elements of acreage. We look at the percentage of the city that it, or the county-city-county combination that is parkland. We also look at the median-sized park. And what those two do is they balance each other out for cities that have maybe bigger acreage, but it's less well-distributed, or cities that have smaller parks that are more well-distributed. So that's acreage. Access is the 10-minute walk. Score that we calculate. We actually redid the entire walkable index with our partner Esri, and we looked at a number of different things. The biggest change for Charlotte was looking at the entire system that Mecklenburg County Parks and Recreation manages. So that resulted in an uptick in terms of the access. Then we look at spending, and spending is three components. It's public spending, and we look at a three-year average to balance out kind of the highs and lows. We look at nonprofit spending, and we also monetize volunteer hours. What we found is that most parks and recreation agencies rely heavily on volunteers, and the 100 largest cities reported 16.9 million hours that were donated in the last most recently completed fiscal year. So that's the spending. And then finally, amenities. And what we try to do is we try to balance the different types of amenities that we track. We actually get data on over two dozen. But the ones that we choose are trying to kind of get at the different usage by different populations, children, adults, and seniors. So they are basketball hoops, dog parks, playgrounds, recreation and senior centers, splash pads, and then restrooms. And those are kind of an indication of amenities that you'll find in a variety of parks, but not necessarily every park, and amenities that serve the biggest needs of the most of the population. So that's ParkScore in a nutshell.
And how did Charlotte Mecklenburg do on this year? Do you have those in front of you there?
Yeah, absolutely. So Charlotte is up slightly this year. We had a few cities that couldn't get us data, so we ranked a total of 97 cities in total. I think the good news is Charlotte is way up in terms of kind of median park size. It's 16.5 acres. The only city that comes close to that is Nashville, which is 16.7. In terms of percentage of the area that is parkland, it's 6%. The median is 9.4%. In terms of the 10-minute walk score, is 36%. We mentioned it was 71%. And then in terms of spending, it's $48 per resident, which is all three of those factors combined, and the median is $90 per resident. And then amenities, there's no 100% for amenities, but the total number of points that Charlotte got was 11 out of 40, and the median is about 20. So we're continuing to see a lot of improvement, and I think the big thing that we did was we made sure that we had the latest data for kind of reflecting the entire system that Lee and his team manage for the county. That was the biggest change.
Okay. So, Lee Jones, I want to ask you for your kind of reaction to what you saw in the score this year. You and I talked about this last week, and you had some thoughts about what's good about the rankings and what's not. I don't know. Give me your thoughts here.
Well, we have to look at our park system a little bit differently, and I'm really glad that the Trust for Public Land took into consideration all the area that we have. We have a lot of special amenities that are not ranked here. I mean, our greenways, our athletic fields, gymnasiums, volleyball courts, tennis courts, pickleball courts, special facilities such as Ray's Splash Planet, Hornets Nest Park, Grady Cole Stadium. These type of amenities that people go to would like to see those more readily included and considered. And we have to drill down and look at the moving target that we have in terms of our population growth.
And let me stop you there. We've got to take a break right now. We're talking about parks and the Park Score rankings for this year. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, committed to drivers that believe a car is used for more than just getting from place to place. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.
Welcome back. It's Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. We're taking a look today at Mecklenburg County's Parks and Recreation System and the National Park Score Rankings. And just a reminder, our panel this week is Charlie McCabe on the telephone from Boston. He's director of the Trust for Public Lands Center for City Park Excellence. We also have Heidi Pruis, chair of the Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation Commission, and Lee Jones, Mecklenburg County's director of Park and Recreation. And Lee, we were just talking about this survey this year that has Charlotte 96th out of 100 and what we have for parks here. You were talking a little bit about why we rank low and what's happened here in Mecklenburg County that puts us in this situation.
Well, as I said, we rank low because we're dealing with a moving target. And one of the biggest moving targets we have is the ratio of available park land to residents. So if we look at Charlotte, Charlotte is 305 square miles, and it's got a population of approximately 859,000 people. Mecklenburg County is 524 square miles, and it has a population of 1.03 million. The entire state has about 10 million people in it. So if you think about it, Mecklenburg County is tasked with providing amenities to one-tenth of the state population. What we've done to try to address that is looking at trying to work more closely with other planning entities, such as the City of Charlotte, as they're getting ready to do their 2040 plan, and we're getting ready to do our new Park and Recreation Master Plan to make sure that there's some forethought given as to how park and recreation amenities are considered. They should be considered as a part of infrastructure so that it's not an afterthought, and then we have to struggle with things like accessibility in a city that has a very strong existing street grid with a lot of urban development that makes it difficult for people to get to one location, a park amenity within a 10-minute walk. And we may be able to do it within an 11-minute walk, but the standard's 10-minute, so we take that. But we've seen some progress also with the fact that we offer 87% of our amenities and access to the public within a 10-minute drive time, and that would be our community parks, regional parks, and our special facilities.
Charlie, let me just ask you, in other cities, is a 10-minute drive considered a benchmark of any kind, or why use that 10-minute walk number?
No, great question. The reason why we kind of focused on the 10-minute walk, and we really see that the barrier, if you can lower the barriers to entry, especially for families with children that may not have access to a car or ready access to a car or public transportation, and you can get them within a half mile or a 10-minute walk to a park, the rate of usage actually goes up. And that is directly resulting in moderate to vigorous exercise more and more. So that's the big reason.
Lee, how is park usage in Mecklenburg County?
Park usage is extremely high. Just this weekend, yesterday, I went out and toured our park system, particularly our outdoor aquatic facilities, Ramsey Beach, Cordelia Pool, and Double Oaks Pool, and they were at capacity. Driving through by Davie Park in the south, by Carmel Road Park, they were all packed. So our population is growing on a daily basis. Earlier in the year, about a year ago, the rate was 40 people per day moving to Charlotte. Now it's upwards of 70 people a day moving to Charlotte, Mecklenburg. So that's a moving target when you try to balance that ratio. But our parks get a tremendous amount of use, and we get a tremendous amount of support from the public and from our advocates.
Heidi, let me turn to you. What is your reaction to this year's ranking and last year's ranking and what we're talking about here?
Right. Well, excuse me. Clearly, park and recreation in Mecklenburg County is well-loved and well-used, and we can notice that in the park score. We love our amenities, and certainly this park score is reflective of the fact that we want more. With that added population coming into Mecklenburg County, we certainly need to have access for more folks, and it's probably about the right score. You know, one of the points about use of our facilities is that there's like more than a million people who visit our nature preserves every single year in Mecklenburg County. That is seven times more than per acre than what the utilization is for the Smoky Mountains National Park. So it's not enough to just need additional facilities and amenities. we need to be actually taking care of those facilities. And so if you have more and more people visiting a neighborhood park, for instance, and there's no restroom available, you're going to see maybe a decline in use, or maybe folks just aren't going to get there in the first place. Maybe they can't get there because there's not a walkway or a trail or a greenway to get there. So certainly with this continued increased population, this park scores is reflective of that. You know, it's unfortunate because in 2012, Mecklenburg County had a gold star standard for the National Parks and Recreation Association. And then when the recession hit, the budget was cut in half, and we just really have not recovered from that. In the meantime, we've had this significant population increase. So struggling to keep up with just who's here today, much less who's going to be here in the future, is really a necessity. And this park score reflects that growing and existing and growing need in Mecklenburg County.
I'm going to step on the fence here. I think the score represents what is measured by the Trust for Public Land. And I give all the credence and gold to the Trust for Public Land. Heidi is right. In 2012, we won the National Gold Medal by the National Recreation and Park Association as being the best park and recreation department in the United States. That year, TPL measured 40 cities, and we were ranked 39th. So how can we be at the bottom of the list but be the top park and recreation department in the United States? That just makes one wonder. In terms of our growth and being able to handle that, I think that we have done a tremendous job. We actually started feeling the pain of the recession in 2009. And by 2010 and 11, we had laid off a significant amount of our staff, and we had to change the way we operated. We're a different agency now. We went from having 9 park districts to 3 park regions. We've changed, even the Park and Recreation Commission has changed the structure of their advisory councils. So we're doing more with less. However, that means we have to work harder. So I'm extremely proud of the advocacy of the Park and Recreation Commission, of our Board of County Commissioners, and of our county manager, Dina DiOrio, recognizing this and the benefit that we bring as not a mandated service but a necessary service, which will be reflected if our budget is approved this year.
Say a little more about that, mandated versus necessary.
Okay, well, we're not public safety. We're not the school system. We're not the sheriff's department. So we really would not have to have a county park and recreation department in theory. It could be a state department or something along those lines. But we don't have any state parks in Mecklenburg County. We do such a good job in terms of what we operate within the 7 incorporated municipalities, including Charlotte, to provide these recreation amenities. So we have so much support from our board that this will continue, and we will continue to grow and do better, as even this small step in terms of what is measured by the TPL has shown some increase. And given the factors that I've talked about that we're dealing with, I think we're doing a fantastic job.
Charlie McCabe at the Trust for Public Land, Lee has been talking here about how they view the whole ranking system. What do you guys hope that this survey will be used for, and how do you work with the cities and towns?
Sure, great question. You know, I think the big thing we want to see is increase in parks advocacy, which translates into more park funding. And I think what you've seen in Charlotte and Mecklenburg County is it's a real push on that in the last year, which is great. I mean, thanks to Lee coming and serving as the head of the organization, but also the advisory committee really kind of pushing hard on that. I think that's one thing. The other thing that I think is always important to remember is this is a high-level overview. We've deliberately picked, a specific number of elements that we can compare all 100 cities to. Most park planning and most park funding happens at a very, very local level, and that's critical because you want to make sure, I think like Lee was mentioning, that you match the need that you have in the specific communities where you're building or improving a park to the needs of the residences that are there. And what we can show are high-level trends and challenges and issues, but at the end of the day, this is a local service delivered and enjoyed locally, which is really an important distinction to remember.
So one of the factors that you looked at was park access, and that's the locations of the parks. Lee mentioned that this county has doubled in size, you know, over the past 20 years or so. And the population growth is something that counties had to keep up with in so many ways. But along with the report that you put out, there was a map, and it showed the locations of parks. And it was a heat map. You know, there were some areas that were red and orange, which means that they have needs for parks in those areas. There were also five or six dots on the map that were recommended park locations. Can you talk about what you are going for there with those recommendations and exactly what you're
Yeah, so we basically look at demographics at a very high level. So we look at four different demographics. We look at density, we look at ethnicity, we look at income, and we look at age. And we try to kind of factor those into where we see there's access to a park and where there's not. Those dots on the map, we call those optimized points. It's a very high level, you know, again, you know, flying over in an airplane kind of view of it. On the ground, it may not be, you know, accurate, and it might be within a square mile or a couple square miles. We do a lot of work with number of cities to locate parks in areas of need, and that really is part of a community engagement kind of effort that most parks and recreation organizations tackle when they're actually looking for parks or where to put parks or where to improve facilities in parks.
Well, Lee Jones, I presume you've seen this map and those dots on the map. Does that line up at all with any planning that you are doing? And let's just say that they were in neighborhoods that are around Uptown, probably lower income neighborhoods to the east and southeast of Uptown.
I think the map is a good measure for what Charlie described as what it's trying to show. We actually have a map that we could overlay on this that we've done a gap analysis using our county geographic information system office and in using other items for mapping. And we've developed these gap areas, and we know where we need to put parks. The issue is where we need to place parks, you know, there may be something else there. There may be an office building there. There may be a residential community there, maybe a school there. So we'll have to work out some sort of partnership agreement as to how we can address that need. And we're being very strategic with that. Our master plan is 10 years old, and we've already sent out an RFQ, request for qualifications, to do a totally new master plan. And it's going to take into consideration all the factors that we've talked about here today, Charlie, Heidi, and I, that need to be addressed. And because we're going to bring in, it's going to be a totally clean sweep. The first part of it is going to be a full assessment of our operations, our planning strategy, the type of parks we have, the locations of them, the changing demographics and growth to try to address that need. I think the study that the TPL does is important, but if you look at what the study looks at, 100 park and recreation departments in the United States. We have 12,000 in the United States, so it's a small look, but it's a good look to just keep people on their toes. And again, in response to the rapidly growing population that we have, we're going to be really investing heavily in park and recreation projects, particularly our greenways. What we want is an amenity within a 10-minute walk. It doesn't have to be a park. It can be a greenway. It can be a recreation center because people want to do different things. And I think by doing this, we will be able to provide much better access and closer, more proximity to the 10-minute walk guideline as stipulated by this study. But our goal is to take the recommendations from this study, but also follow our national governing organization, which is the National Recreation and Park Association.
Charlie, back to that map of Charlotte-Mecklenburg here and what it shows as far as access. Can we learn anything from that map about are there areas that are in need of parks more than others? Are there, you know, is it socioeconomic? How can we read that map? What are the big headlines?
Yeah, sure. I think the big thing that most parks and recreation organizations are looking at in the 100 largest cities and beyond is really kind of that gap analysis that Lee mentioned. And they, you know, most organizations have a pretty good handle on where the needs are. And where lower income folks, especially lower income kids and lower income seniors, which are two of the more underserved groups, need recreation and need kind of specific amenities that meet their needs. And we're seeing that equity lens applied in cities across the United States. A growing number of cities actually have a kind of a comprehensive plan to address the inequity that may have occurred over the past several decades or even longer. So Minneapolis, San Francisco, Seattle, Boston, New York are some of the examples, Philadelphia, and different organizations or different cities are doing different ways of funding those improvements. Philadelphia is probably the most well-known in that it's using a combination of private funds as well as the proceeds from a soda tax over 10 years to improve about 50% of their parks.
That's an interesting idea, a soda tax. Lee, do you think you could get that through the county commission here?
I don't know about a soda tax, but I look at cities like Denver, Colorado. The way they benefit is they benefit from parimutuel betting. You know, part of their lottery proceeds goes directly into a fund to develop parks there, which is why they rank high. I think the county has made a tremendous investment in park and recreation. For our current CIP from 2019
Capital Improvement Plan.
I'm all right. Bent on acronyms. We have a $229 million investment that's going to provide us an additional 27 park amenities, significant park amenities, including 200,000 square foot regional recreation centers to meet the ever growing needs. And then our Greenway projects, money for marketing and analysis to determine how to let people know what we have so they will be able to experience the amenities that we do offer.
Heidi, I wanted to go back to you for your thoughts on this question of access and equity in particular. As the chair of the Park and Recreation Commission, what are you guys concerned about?
Right. Well, we do talk about this quite a lot, as a topic. You know, getting parks and recreation services into those underserved and vulnerable communities is a top priority. It's one of the five top priorities that the Park and Recreation Commission has identified in the past through our reporting. What's critical is not only budgeting for these capital improvement projects and operations to run our parks, but also to acquire land. And certainly, if you don't have land accessible in those underserved communities, you're going to be struggling with maybe paying a premium cost for land in those areas. So looking at land accessibility, there's only 18% of Mecklenburg County that is currently listed as vacant in the City of Charlotte's Quality of Life Survey. Where are those properties? How can we gain accessibility to them? And really, where is the priority with the county to look at budgeting long-term for parks into the future, which requires acquiring land, maybe in some of those vulnerable and underserved communities?
That's Heidi Pruce. She's chair of the Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation Commission. We're also talking with Lee Jones, Mecklenburg County's director of Park and Recreation. And on the phone is Charlie McCabe, director of the Trust for Public Lands Center for City Park Excellence. We're talking about parks in Mecklenburg County today and the 2019 Park Score rankings. It's time for us to take a break. We'll be right back. I'm David Borax. You're listening to Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. This is Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE. Today we're taking a look at Mecklenburg County's park and recreation system. I'm David Borax, sitting in for Mike Collins. Just a reminder, our panel this week is Lee Jones, Mecklenburg County's Park and Recreation Director, Heidi Pruce, Chair of the Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation Commission, and Charlie McCabe, Director of the Trust for Public Lands Center for City Park Excellence. Charlie, I want to go back to you. One of the things that you've all mentioned this morning is greenways, and I think that's something that is becoming popular in cities across the country. What does your survey find about greenways, and why is that an imperative?
Greenways is actually a big growth area. We're still trying to get an accurate assessment from all 100 cities. It's a little challenging in terms of how different folks count trail systems, but I think Mecklenburg County is following the lead of some historic greenway systems. Raleigh would be a great example. Lincoln, Nebraska would be another great example that have had several hundred miles of trails for years and are working on expanding them. I think the more notable ones that to look at are a city like Houston, Texas, which with the nonprofit Houston Parks Board is spending a little less than $200 million over 10 years to develop 150 miles of hike and bike trails in a way to kind of knit together portions of the city for a lot of the reasons that both Lee and Heidi have mentioned before. Everything from alternative transportation to getting folks from neighborhoods to schools, neighborhoods to parks, and beyond. So we're seeing a lot of investment in that space, and I think we'll continue to see an acceleration there.
Heidi, a minute ago, was talking about the cost of land and the importance of acquiring land to make sure you have parks in the future. How big an issue is this for cities across the country? Is this just like here in Charlotte, where the land is dwindling and getting more expensive?
It's a big issue, and I think cities are getting more creative in looking at ways to fund improvements or to share improvements. I'll give you two examples. One of the ones that we've seen in Dallas especially is that they've actually got a joint use agreement with the local power company to actually use their rights of way where their high tension wires are to actually thread trails through the city. And this has resulted in about 15 miles of trails being built in the last few years. They've been kind of aided and abetted by a bond fund that was passed in November of 2017 to help kind of drive this. But that's a great example where they have a growing system. They have a they're doing marketing, like we mentioned. They're really kind of pushing the envelope. The other thing that we're seeing that's a good one, a good focus, is joint use agreements with schools. Oddly enough, school districts have their own lands that have things like playgrounds and basketball hoops and playing fields, but they aren't necessarily open and available for folks to use after school hours and on weekends. And we've seen about a third of the total cities, the 100 largest cities, actually create joint use agreements with one or more school sites or school districts to actually add capability there. Dallas added 32 schools in kind of like a pilot phase in the last year, and that boosted their 10-minute walk score several points just with that kind of stroke of a pen. And
let me ask,
it also allows,
go ahead,
please.
I was just saying, let me ask Lee Jones to talk a little bit about how that kind of partnership works with Mecklenburg County Parks.
That's a great partnership. We have over 20 joint use agreements with CMS, and we're getting more. We've built recreation centers. We've built parks on land that's owned by CMS or that's owned by the county that we've deeded to CMS. And it's part of our paradigm because we have the Citizens Capital Budget Advisory Committee that advises on budget proposals for different departments. And one of the things that they stipulate, the CCBAC stipulates, is that Park and Recreation, CMS, and libraries have to use joint use to get the biggest bang for the buck for facilities.
Can you give us an example of a facility where this, how this works?
Okay, let's look at Berwick. Berwick Elementary School, that's off of Dixie River Road. We have an elementary school there. They were going to put a cafeteria inside. The county invested an additional $1.5 million to turn that into a full-fledged recreation center that we operate from 3 o'clock forward to be able to run programs there. We've also built a park there and have a master plan to continue that park. The first phase included two baseball fields with soccer field overlays, a shelter, picnic area, and playground, a separate playground from the school so that parents can bring their kids there during the school day and not interfere with operations at the school. We've also found a way that we can increase our park score by working with CMS to deed off anywhere from 1.5 to 3.5 acres at certain schools, and we've identified 10 of those that will increase our access by serving anywhere from 500 to 2,500 residents at these different sites that we know is going to help us in terms of meeting the goal of quick accessibility.
It sounds like the park score is inspiring some creativity here on meeting this need.
Absolutely. And again, you know, with our trail system, we have 250 miles of trails. That includes bike trails and unpaved trails, but we have close to 60 miles of greenway on the ground and more planned.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to turn our attention now to the Mecklenburg County budget for this coming year. The 2020 fiscal year starts July 1st. This year's budget has $51 million in it, and Lee, you told me that's a 33% increase. What are we getting in this budget that we haven't had, and why the big increase this year?
Well, what we're getting this year is we're getting additional funding for ongoing maintenance. We have what we call deferred maintenance now that's usually in the form of about $4.5 million, $4.7 million a year. This year's proposal, we get an additional $3.9 million because we've done so well with applying that money appropriately to upgrade our facilities to meet the growing needs of the public. We get an approximately 40 new positions in areas of maintenance and particularly in areas of land acquisition and park planning and greenway development to expedite that. We're addressing security issues that have been raised by the public and by our staff in terms of feeling safe at work. We're hiring more park rangers to be able to give them a higher level quality of life. To be able to not have to work so many days, and particularly on days that people desire to be with their families on the weekend. So we're also getting money to deal to better manage our natural resources, our 26 nature preserves, by having money to get rid of invasive species. We had some trial money that we've been very successful in spending that. The board liked that, and so they're going to give us that money every year, so we're very excited about that.
Maintenance absolutely critical for keeping up with the facilities that you already have. I think that's always something that local governments struggle with. I heard you say that there are new positions in the budget for land acquisition. Is that right?
That is true.
Is there money in the budget for land acquisition?
Currently, we get $6.6 million a year. And over the past 7 years, we spent over $60 million. So we've gone above our allocation to spend that. Now, some of those have been large purchases, but there is a big push to get additional money in the budget for that, and we hope it comes through.
You're saying there's a push to get more money than
there's a push to get more money in the budget this year for additional land acquisition. We've been getting a lot of advocacy from the public, from the Park and Recreation Commission, and other entities that support that initiative.
Heidi, the Park and Recreation Commission has gotten involved in this, as it's one of your roles is to advise the County Commission on this. What are your thoughts about what the budget looks like right now and where you think it needs to go?
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, we're very pleased and happy that the county manager and Director Jones here have recognized that, yes, there's a deficit in the amount of staff that we have. Certainly, we're about 60 full-time employees less than the national average for a park system our size. So adding 40 is a huge leap forward, and we're very appreciative of that. We're also appreciative of the maintenance dollars increasing because, of course, we see the need. Land acquisition, though, has been that number one priority of the Park and Recreation Commission for the last 2 years running in our reports to the Board of County Commissioners. And you know, back in 2011 through 2016, the county was purchasing about 348 acres per year. In FY 17 and 18, it was down to about 150. 1 year it's 140, one was 176. So certainly there is room for improvement, although we're spending a lot of money doing it. The cost of land is increasing, and we know that in order to meet our needs for the future, certainly we're going to need a long-term projection. If we're going to get the acres per person, we're down about 8,000 acres or so for a county our size for our Park and Recreation Commission, Park and Recreation system for our community. So if it's $8,000 and we want to go with today's rate, it might cost us $1 billion to catch up to where we need to be for into the future for our population growth if we're expecting another 500,000 people to move here by 2027. So if that's the case, then land acquisition and land identification of land, maybe through these collaborative agreements, maybe through outright purchase for the county, it's certainly a priority that we would like to see increased in the budget. The $6.6 million is, quite frankly, not going to get us to where we need to be.
Lee, it seems to me like we're under the gun here. There's a clock ticking. Land in Mecklenburg County, last time I checked, was not going down in value. And the amount, I think you mentioned before, we have only about 16 or 18% of vacant land in the county. there needs to be a sense of urgency here, doesn't there? And yeah. How are you guys addressing that?
Well, the clock that you're talking about ticking, I see it as kind of a broken stopwatch. Sometimes it goes really fast, sometimes it goes really slow. And that I'm talking about is with the economy. You know, about every 10, 12 years, we get what I would call a correction, and it slows down. And then the price of everything goes down. Labor becomes more available, but the price of property goes down. Right now, it is a seller's market. And so the county's guideline in buying land is paying appraised value. We get people that wants to pay highest and best use value. So we're buying land for a park. They see a 20-story high-rise. I can get a lot more money. I'm not going to sell it to you. So we have to continue to be strategic, and we have to utilize the funding that we have available. But if we want to buy a lot of land when the economy is the way it is now, it's going to cost us more money.
Mm-hmm. Heidi, one of the things that your group has been concerned about is in 2008, the voters in Mecklenburg County approved bonds to do a bunch of park projects, many of which have not been done yet.
That's true.
Are we going to get there?
Well, the five-year capital plan that goes through 2023 does address many of those projects, those old 2008 bond projects that have not yet been created. There are about six projects, though, that are scheduled out for 2024 and beyond as far as completion goes. Most of those, I think, are all being started by 2023, but they are not.
Can you tell us what some of those are?
There are three different greenway projects, and then there are three different park projects, recreation center upgrades, and that sort of thing. So, for instance, Mallard Creek Recreation Center is one of our most popular recreation centers. It's always overbooked. Every single camp, every single class is full. They have 50 seniors in fitness class every morning out there. And so this facility is busting at the seams and due for an improvement and upgrade. That it was in the 2008 bond. So that was 15 years ago if you get to 2023. And they are not scheduled for the completion of that project until 2024 or some year after that. So these are projects that our community raised their voice and said, yes, please spend bond dollars to complete these projects. And, you know, 15 years later, we're still waiting for many of them to get approved. We recognize the recession happened, but those are projects that certainly we want to complete because we know we've got a new master plan coming on the way. There are going to be new projects that are identified through that master plan that the community is going to be eager to have. And so we are at a point in time where we can afford to address some of those outstanding projects, and we should be taking that opportunity to do that.
Lee Jones.
Our FY19 to 23 CIP, Capital Improvement Project Cash Flow, tries to capture an amount of money every year that we can spend efficiently and effectively. Yes, Mallard Creek Recreation Center recently celebrated its 20-year anniversary, and I was there for that. Beautiful facility, wonderful facility. It's like a well-maintained car. It's well, but we do have money in here, over $5 million, to upgrade that facility, and we're going to start it in 2023 and hopefully complete it sometime after that. We have within 2 years, we have two recreation center renovation projects going on right now, Chagall Creek and Marion Deal Park. Those will be completed in 2 years. So there are things that everybody wants to see things quicker. They want to see them faster because we're growing so much. We want it now, but you can't do everything at once.
Will all of the projects that were in the 2008 bonds get done, or have priorities changed?
I think all the projects that we've listed that were approved in the 2008 bond referendum back in 2008 are captured here. Now, there were some other projects that were added that were not a part of that, and that included some nature preserves, a couple of stretches of greenway that are part of our overall Greenway Master Plan that are not included there because they were not a part of that list of approved projects. But we know, as Heidi said, with our new Master Plan, those projects will likely be captured, and we will get some guidance on how to prioritize those to seek funding for them for the next Capital Improvement Plan.
Great. I want to go back to Charlie one more time here. We had some comments from listeners here. Lee on Facebook says, great cities have great green space near the center city. We need to extend the Sugar Creek Greenway to NoDa. Creeks are natural places we need to celebrate. And Anna, quickly, if you could answer this, Anna wonders if swim clubs and private facilities in subdivisions are included in your access.
Great question. No, they are not. Any facility that's included has to be a publicly accessible facility owned and operated by the public or owned and operated by a nonprofit operating on parkland. So
great.
That's the way we look at it.
Well, you get the last word there, Charlie. Thank you so much. That's Charlie McCabe, director of this Center for City Park Excellence at the Trust for Public Lands. Heidi Pruis is with us, chair of Mecklenburg County Park and Recreation Commission, and Lee Jones, Mecklenburg County's director of Park and Recreation. Thank you so much for joining us this morning on Charlotte Talks. I'm David Borak, sitting in for Mike Collins. This is 90.7 WFAE.
Charlotte Talks is sponsored by Mazda of South Charlotte, dedicated to helping customers select vehicles that fit one's lifestyle. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.